Howdy, folks. Travis here from the I'm Not Dead Yet podcast. And I want to tell you my cyanotypes are on display at the South Windsor Public Library in South Windsor, Connecticut. You should all go and check that out. It's from March 17th till April 20th. If you take a photo of yourself at the gallery, we will post it on our Instagram and Facebook page. What are you waiting for? Go check out my cyanotype. Thanks.
Welcome to I'm Not Dead Yet with Judy and Travis, a podcast about living an extraordinary life with extraordinary circumstances.
Welcome to the I'm Not Dead Yet podcast. I'm your co-host, Travis Robinson. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease at age 35 in 2014.
And I'm your other co-host, Judy Yaris. My husband, Sandy, had Parkinson's disease for 18 years. I was his care partner.
In today's episode, we'll be talking about camping and travel and some of the other adventures one can get oneself into when traveling with a life-changing disease like Parkinson's disease.
Sounds good. Let's get started. Travis, you just came back from a trip. How was it?
It was really good, Judy. It was a short 3-4 day camping trip to Anza Borrego State Park, which, for those who aren't familiar with California's state park system, is in the southeastern corner of the state, eastern San Diego County, near the Salton Sea, and is principally desert, and as such, it provides some unique challenges to the parkie wanting to go out and camp there.
I'm assuming it's very beautiful this time of year.
Yes, it was really beautiful. It was also starting to get hot, which for those of us with the PD, it can present some unique challenges to enjoying oneself in inclement weather.
Right, because we know people with Parkinson's do not do well with the heat.
Or the cold.
Right.
So for me, it's about packing accordingly to give myself enough latitude in both directions, you know, to protect myself from either extreme to assure I have a good time, which is possible, again, as long as I'm planning carefully, which I find is the secret to any sort of adventure, is thinking long and hard about what I expect to do and what the particular challenges that I'm liable to face out there will be.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, we already talk sometimes about planning just in your everyday life, let alone now you're going away from home and you're out in a wilderness area. So it's not like you can just run to the corner and grab an extra jacket. You really have to make sure that you have everything in place.
Right. And for anyone who's ever stayed at Anza Borrego, it is probably one of the most city-friendly camping parks. It has bathrooms, showers. I didn't check to see if it had state Wi-Fi, but It's that kind of camping place.
My kind of camping place, probably.
But as you said, I was a good 3 hours drive away from home and away from any medications that I might need or easy convenience of my own home where I can adjust the air conditioning or turn up the heat.
So you're really at the mercy of nature, and how you're going to adapt to that is going to be very important.
Right. At the mercy of nature and at the mercy of my planning, which, again, for me, I know I'm going to be out in the wilderness environment, so I plan. For example, one thing I know is it will be critical for me to stay hydrated, especially on the warmer days. And as I've described before on the show, I have trouble drinking plain water as I'm inclined to choke on it from time to time. So I packed a squeezy bottle so that I could get, you know, suction streams of water as opposed to, you know, like a Nalgene where I would have to drink from an open container of water, if that makes sense.
Yes. For some people that might be listening for the first time and may not have heard us talk about some of the issues with food and choking with Parkinson's, it's a very common occurrence that people with Parkinson's can choke very easily on something as simple as water or juice, or just eating a piece of watermelon, which creates too much juice. So you really have to prepare yourselves. And there are different things you can use. Just so you know, there are products that can make drinking water a lot easier. One is called Thicken Up. And you mix it. They come in little packets. You can get it on Amazon if you need to. And it mixes with water. It's tasteless. And it'll thicken the water so it becomes either a nectar thick or honey thick. And then you won't choke as you drink it. So if you're planning a trip out, that's what we would do. We would take these little packets with us if we knew we were going to eat in a restaurant.
Or if you're having trouble, I've also found that carbonation really helps. So mm-hmm. I packed carbonated water. It's
smart.
Very simple, since we were already bringing a cooler. I just threw some cans of LaCroix in there and drank that.
Perfect. A good solution. Something that makes it easy for you.
And it was also essential for me to change the temperature of the water. And I was talking with this about strategies with my swallow therapist, speech pathologist, who said that some of the things that could be helpful included changing the temperature of the beverage. So that it actually produces a swallow reflex. When you drink cold things, it tells your body to swallow more quickly than room temperature thing.
That's a great tip. That's wonderful. I've never heard that one before. Okay. So that's tip number one for the day. Here we go. Actually, it's tip number two, because number one was planning. You have to plan when you're going to take a trip. You don't decide at 11 o'clock at night that you're going camping the next morning.
Well, if you do, I expect you'll have a fairly sleepless night, which, you know, amongst other PD folks, maybe that's not out of the ordinary.
Sure not.
But also, you know, planning my medication. What to take, how much to take, and what containers to take it in. Because I didn't want to take my entire, you know, stash of carbidopa,
right,
for example, when I was only going to be gone 3 days. So I dumped a healthy amount into a easy-to-open pill container. and just took that.
Travis, did you take an extra few days with you as well? Like, did you take enough that if you got stranded? This was one of my techniques that I always did when we traveled. I always made sure I had at least 4 days of extra medication, just in case we got delayed, if something happened to the first batch that I had planned, or if that got moisture in it. I wanted to make sure that I always had extra.
Absolutely. I probably took a spare week's worth.
Good.
I didn't divvy it up like I know a lot of folks do in the different, you know, pill per day containers.
Right.
But for me, it is essential to always have more medication than you think you'll need, because if you're in a challenging environment, you might need more.
That's right. You don't know what to expect. So now we've got your medication covered. What other things did you do in terms of planning or being prepared for adverse effects?
So one of the problems that I've had, and, you know, this could easily be from having 3 knee surgeries as much as Parkinson's, or just not being quite as young as I used to be, is climbing down on my hands and knees to get into and out of the tent on a regular basis is challenging. So I brought not only knee pads, but a little inflatable sitting pad that I also used as a kneeler to get into and out of my tent.
That makes great sense.
Yeah, it worked really well.
Smart. So here's where creativity comes into place, because you have to think creatively when you're going to travel and think of ways of making it easier for you, which you just did. The knee pads make sense, but I wouldn't have thought about bringing a little inflatable chair. That's really smart.
Yeah, it's just a tiny pad for sitting on the harder, colder cement or wood benches that are typical at campgrounds that you can buy from your favorite outdoor retailer. And, you know, they make a world of difference in terms of how comfortable you are.
I think it's good to recognize that you have to adapt when you're going to make a trip, whether you're going to Europe and you're going into museums and walking on cobblestones, or whether you're going on a camping trip. It's the same kind of thing. You still have to adapt to the environment and what will make it easier for you. And you're tall, so I can't imagine, like, I'm trying to picture this, watching you get into the tent. And I'm sorry, I have to say, it feels a little comical to me on one level, but I'm sure it doesn't feel comical to you when you're trying to do it.
Well, I have an appreciation for Three Stooges routines, and I can see myself playing the part of a stooge really easily, especially when trying to climb down into and out of that tent.
That sounds good. So let me ask you this. You obviously were not camping by yourself. You were with Sarah, your partner. How was it for Sarah?
Actually,
or you were not?
I did not take Sarah on this particular trip because she had to work. However, I was with a friend who works at a large Los Angeles Metropolitan Hospital and is a nurse, and I was with a work trip of his, so we were about 18 emergency room nurses strong. So I figured if I got into any difficulty, I had 18 ER nurses on hand to help me out.
That was perfect. Very smart on that one. I like that planning. Take your own medical team. You've got it made.
Right?
Right. Perfect.
Yeah, you've got to be thinking about this.
Thinking ahead, absolutely.
No comment will be made about the state of care I would have received after the drinks and the margaritas started flowing. But, you know, up until then, I'm quite certain I would have received stellar care.
Yes. So how did you do with your hiking? We now know that you, how you got in and out of a tent, but did your hiking work out to be expected of what you would, what you thought it was going to be? Or did you have an expectation for yourself? How does that play out when you know you're going to do day hikes?
So this trip was specifically focused on shorter day hikes as opposed to the mountaineering where I'm, you know, running a backpack for 10 miles up and up and up and, you know, dealing with the exhaustion that comes from that. This was a much shorter duration, lighter pack. And we visited one of the slot canyons at Enza Borrego, and that was really neat. It allowed me to go along and kind of use the side walls of the slot canyon for any sort of stability issues I might have. You know, it was sort of like bumper lanes in a bowling alley. Just boing, boing, boing off the walls, and that kept me upright.
I'm assuming that a slot canyon means that it's a very narrow canyon.
Yes, narrow in the terms of turned sideways to pass.
Okay.
Yes, and in fact, I think it was a bigger challenge for some of the nurses who are a little fond of the work donut than it was for me with the PD, because as I said, I was in a almost perfect bowling alley, you know, environment where I couldn't fall very far to one side or another, but they were having some trouble getting through some of the tighter squeezes.
I see. It was sort of like having bumpers on either side for you.
Yes. So that was hiking in the slot canyons. And then for the next day, we principally focused on doing an overland route, which for those who are not familiar with the term, overlanding is a process where you go in a 4x4 vehicle over a jeep track or truck track, as opposed to hiking. So we stayed in an air-conditioned Jeep Wrangler and let it do the motivation and the heavy lifting for that trip.
So that must have been fun.
Yeah, it was.
And easy on the body.
Well, anyone who's ever gone off-roading would know that it's a bit shaken, not stirred kind of environment. But yes, it was easier than hiking over the same distance.
Did you find yourself more tired on this trip than other trips you've been on?
Only the first day. The first day, the temperature was higher than the rest of the trip, and, you know, there's just no way around it. After it breaks about 85 degrees, I sort of shut down. Yeah. So I spent a large part of that first day hanging out under the shade structure and consuming as much cold water as I could. And at the end of that day, even though I had not done hardly anything, I felt worse than at the end of the next 2 days, even though we did stop those days. And that's something that I would say is really important too, is setting your expectations. You know, making sure that your itinerary is flexible enough that on a hot day, I didn't have to go anywhere or do anything. And so it allowed me that latitude to just hang out and camp and stay hydrated, wait for the big ball of fire to leave the sky. Then I could go out and take photographs and We went on a little hike that evening, and it was splendid. But while the big fireball was still torching the sky, it was best to just hang out under the shade and wait it out.
So I think, Travis, I mean, you do a lot of camping and a lot of wilderness retreats. And I think you have a good sense of what works best for you. And it sounds like you're okay with just hanging out. And that's something that we need to get across to our listeners, is that sometimes you just have to hang out. You may not want to, but you may have to, so that the rest of your trip can be enjoyable.
Yes, I was, like I said, very both grateful but also determined to make it so that my itinerary was flexible. There's no way I would want to go on a trip where I had to be at this place doing this thing, regardless of how I felt or how the weather was on a particular day. Mm-hmm. To me, it is absolutely essential to have that flexibility.
I think that's a good point. Whether you're going on a long trip, you know, overseas, or you're planning on staying in the city and even doing a day trip where you're just going, maybe taking a drive to Malibu or going down to San Diego for a day, your expectation of what you're going to feel like that day, you don't know till you wake up.
Right. And even then, I was surprised on a few situations where I woke up feeling very good. And, you know, as the day progressed, I ended up being more tired than I expected to be. And this is just being home doing my usual thing, you know?
Right.
So again, having that latitude while out and about and away from my home, away from my usual bed and whatnot, it is essential. If I don't get, you know, the perfect night's sleep or whatever, I have that buffer in the itinerary.
I've heard people say that a lot of people like to travel with friends where they do a yearly trip together, or they go a couple times a year and they do these wonderful trips. And if you have a newer diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, it's not going to be the same kind of trip, but you may have limitations, and you need to let your friends know ahead of time that there may be limitations and that you may not participate maybe in one of the activities of the day, and that you're okay with that, and ask them if they can please be okay with that. And if you set that up ahead of time, there's no real chance for disappointment from the friend, or even disappointment in yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think it is one of those things that, you know, you and I can say it, and we've both been around the PD rodeo a few times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember from my earlier years with the disease, that would have been a very difficult idea to wrap my head around, that I won't be able to, you know, do any specific task or thing that I want to do. And so sometimes I think it's just something you learn with a certain amount of mileage, you know?
I think with experience and time, you find that there are different ways of travel, and you can make it equally as enjoyable and have fun, but you have to be flexible. And flexibility is a big key here.
Yes.
So is that a wrap for us today, Travis? Any other last pointers you might want to make?
No, I think that's about a wrap for us today. Okay, Judy.
All right, Travis.
Bing.